Thanks very much, Mike. Yeah, it's been a very interesting ride as I get to this point in my career. The integration of informatics and the development of laboratory capacity internationally is really becoming striking. There's a tremendous amount of interest among programs in developing laboratory information systems and developing laboratory capacity, and a tremendous amount of interest among donors. And we face the same issues that were just mentioned about horizontal structures versus vertical structures in building laboratory capacity and in building laboratory information systems. You will find in some countries laboratories who have excellent quality of testing for, say, polio or malaria or HIV, but you can go to some other disease and none of the same structures or processes are in place to support those particular diseases. And in the same way, you can find databases that work for particular diseases, but not in general for the laboratory. And I think that's another important consideration here, that when we talk about laboratory information systems, we're talking about systems that are not simply for putting laboratory reports or results into patient care systems. We're talking about laboratory information systems in the sense that they support the work of the laboratory as well, and I'll touch on some of these points as we go along. Before we do that, though, I'd like to interject just a little bit of humor here this morning. I know that many of you need to go back to your respective areas and provide a report. So what did you learn at the Finn conference? So a few of the things that you have learned here I'd like to put up. So what I learned at the Finn conference. So there's a lot of great things that go on in Georgia. We have the largest, busiest airport in Hartsfield Airport. But we also have the Varsity Restaurant, which is an institution here in Georgia. And it's earned the distinction of serving the highest volume of Coca-Cola anywhere in the world. There are approximately 55 streets with the name Peachtree in Georgia. I think 54 of them are in Atlanta. And in Gainesville, which is the chicken capital of the world, it's illegal to eat chicken with a fork. You have to use your hands. So we probably have a lot of Yankees languishing in the Gainesville jail right now. So I really want you to remember the important information, but if I see you next year, I'll bet you'll remember some of these. So what am I going to talk about this morning? I'm going to talk about what are the drivers for laboratory information systems development, what guidance is available currently to countries to assist them in doing that, what are some of the country experiences, and what are some of the lessons learned. And here I'd like to acknowledge that the Global AIDS Program is doing a tremendous amount of work in supporting the development of laboratory information systems. And one of our major partners at CDC, the Association of Public Health Laboratories, is assisting with many of these implementations, and many of the slides that I have today are contributed by them. So to give a little bit of context, in the US, we have over 205,000 laboratories in the US. These are CLIA-certified laboratories, so Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments. And these laboratories have been under some kind of federal authority since 1967. The most recent revision to the amendments was in 1988 that brought in physician office laboratories under that. So we have a record of every laboratory that exists in the United States that does testing on human specimens. We have colleges and universities that are established to provide laboratory personnel. Medicine in the U.S. is evidence-based practice, and there are about 8 billion tests performed every year in the U.S., and it brings in revenue of approximately $52 billion. So this is clearly a major system that we have here in the U.S. that has been in place for many, many years. Now, when we go into international settings, we find the extreme opposite. There are no regulations. Nobody knows how many laboratories there are in a particular country. And Just a few pictures here. This is an area in a laboratory where reagent preparation is performed. This is an area where stains for TB were being performed. This picture and this picture are the same laboratory 6 years later. This is a sustainable facility. It is located in Chennai. We work closely with the government in Tamil Nadu to develop this laboratory and brought in new technology to assist them. And the point is here that there are programs. This was all done under the Global AIDS program. There are programs that are doing great work towards contributing to the development. And it can be done in relatively short periods of time, and it can be done in a sustainable fashion. Some other things that are contributing to the development of laboratory capacity and quality laboratory information, because that's what we're talking about here today, is information. There's an organization called the Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics, FIND. I believe it's a spin-off, or in some way was associated with the World Health Organization early on. Giorgio Roschino is the director of this group. And they're working on several different technologies that are very broad-based and will be applicable to a number of different diseases. They're not disease-specific technologies. So for example, here they've developed a light-emitting diode microscope. They've developed this with a large corporation, with Carl Zeiss Corporation. And it has many advantages that fluorescent microscopy does not have. And fluorescent microscopy, obviously used for tuberculosis work, examining tuberculosis smears. So this could be a real step forward. They're also working with a company to develop nucleic acid testing technologies that can be done on the bench and in one shot. In other words, you don't need three rooms to do PCR amplifications anymore. This is a single set. You do collect the specimen, put the specimen in a reagent, and put the reagent into a cassette, plug that into the machine, and an hour and a half later you get a readout. Again, these are technologies that are in development and very close to being final. This is another one, another nucleic acid technology that doesn't require a thermocycler for amplification. It can be done on the bench. This is being actually tested out in a slum in Mumbai, India. So the combination of programs and organizations that are developing new technologies, some of these technologies lending themselves to automation and transfer of information directly into information systems, this is all coming together very nicely. Couple that with major policy changes that have occurred in the last few years, the international health regulations that were signed on by every country belonging to the World Health Organization in 2005. I believe they require a plan to be in place by 2009 and to be implemented in 2012. And these regulations require a public health system to establish the laboratory capacity to identify, monitor, and report to the health authorities on agents that may cause epidemics and emergencies, including those of international importance. And then these words I've highlighted: in a safe, timely, and reliable manner. So the reliable piece is very important. We don't want to be developing laboratory information systems before we actually address the reliability of the data that's going to be going into those systems. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in parallel as we're developing laboratory information systems. There are a lot of opportunities to be doing this work. Organizations driving it, as I mentioned before. The World Health Organization has a twinning initiative that is working very well. I mentioned the IHR regulations. CDC and WHO conducted CD International Conference on Health Laboratory Quality Systems this past April in Lyon. In Maputo, in the Global AIDS program developed a clinical laboratory testing harmonization and standardization. And recently, addressing the informatics issues, the University of Washington, funded by the Rockefeller Institute, hosts these e-health conferences in Bellagio. And I was fortunate enough to participate in one this year, as was Ramesh. and some of the people in this room maybe, on e-health, making the e-health connection. So my point so far, it has been there are a lot of changes that are coming about by programs, by donors, an increasing recognition of the need to be collaborating and integrating our work. And I think we're at a point in time where this is ready to take off. Now, there isn't much in the literature about laboratory information system development, and that's understandable in a way. You have to find the right place to publish that. This is out of an electronic journal and is work that was done in Peru describing a web-based laboratory information system to improve quality of care of tuberculosis patients. Unfortunately, this is also an example of a very vertical program. This is in Peru, and I have been talking with Dr. Patty Garcia, who is the director of the NIH in Peru. They actually have developed a separate system for their 24 regional laboratories in Peru that integrates all of the other diseases. So this is a good thing to have done. It has given some experience in Peru, but it is sort of that example of a vertical program that doesn't really allow the integration of other diseases. Now, of course, as I mentioned earlier, one of the really important aspects of a laboratory information system is that it has to support the work of the laboratory. And this is where the quality piece comes in. It has to address the business processes of the laboratory, the accessioning of specimens, generation of daily worksheets, capturing electronic data where possible, quality assurance, quality control issues, billing, results reporting, alerting, management reports. And these are all important considerations for the laboratory, and the reporting piece is what many of the surveillance programs would be interested in, but should also be interested in, of course, the quality of the information coming out. In terms of technical assistance and guidance, there are a number of organizations that provide that, as I've mentioned earlier. Certainly WHO has been involved in this, CDC through the PEPFAR Global AIDS Program, the Association of Public Health Laboratories, the International Training and Education Center, ITEC, at the University of Washington, and a number of universities, the Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute, that used to be the National Clinical Laboratory, National Committee for Clinical Laboratory Standards, is now an international organization. So there, and they have addressed informatics issues and laboratory information systems. So there's a lot of assistance and technical guidance available. But as I mentioned earlier, at this point, as far as I know, and I'm aware, the APHL is doing most of the work. They have actually developed a guidebook for implementation of laboratory systems in resource-poor settings. And this is really the how-to book. It explains the importance of process in developing a laboratory information system. And if you don't have that, and this is an example of that, there have nine steps that they refer to, all the way from forming the working group, determining functional requirements at typical sites, all the way through to deployment of the laboratory information system. And I think we all know that if you don't go through that process with a client in developing their system, what you have is something like is explained in this Dilbert cartoon from Scott Adams, where the developer says, I'll need to know your requirements before I start to design the software. First of all, what are you trying to accomplish? And the client says, I'm trying to make you design my software. And the developer says, I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with the software? The client says, I don't know what I can accomplish until you tell me what the software can do. And the developer says, try to get this concept through your thick skull. The software can do whatever I design it to do. He thinks for a minute and says, can you design it to tell you my requirements? And for those of you who have developed software, you know this isn't too far from the truth sometimes. Now, I'd like to go to some of the issues, actually, that Ramesh spoke of, the problem that currently exists out there. What do we see in terms of not just laboratories, but the information that's developed by laboratories? And we see the same thing that Ramesh pointed out earlier. We see registers, and in the same country, even in the same city, from one facility to another, you will see registers kept in different ways. And we have the same pictures that Ramesh has, all of the unaccessible information that, interestingly enough, is saved for years and years and years. I was in a laboratory recently where they sort of proudly pointed out that they have data back to, what was it, 1950 or something like that. And yes, there were stacks of paper that were obviously that old sitting there, but as Ramesh pointed out, probably inaccessible. So I'd like to talk about two examples where APHL has been working with the Global AIDS Program and with CDC staff in country to develop laboratory information systems. The first is in Tanzania. And they developed a two-phase approach here. Phase one, the formation of laboratory information system teams, overall strengthening of lab processes and infrastructure, including looking at a new paper-based system that I'll mention in a little bit. But once again, one of the focuses here was strengthening the overall laboratory processes, not simply looking at the end result. Creation of a laboratory information system action plan to drive the project schedule, selection and purchase of and installation of hardware, and then phase two, looking at pilot sites in Tanzania. In terms of progress, what they've done so far, it's quite extensive. I'm not going to go through all these, but they've been successful in implementing the system at the national setting, and are live now in four additional settings in phase two in these pilot programs. But I think the important thing to take away from this is what we're all aware of, is that process is very important, and having guidance tools, having technical assistance to provide to these countries is important. Because as Ramesh mentioned earlier, very often there isn't the capacity there to actually help. We need to be in there with that initial assistance, but the country ownership is critical as well. Countries have to take ownership of this so that when any of that technical assistance and guidance steps away, there are people there who can carry on. In terms of the paper-based system, they developed standardized investigation request forms, pre-printed specimen labels, unique ID numbers, pre-printed registers that were distributed, general laboratory management tools for quality assurance and quality control, standardized disease reporting tools, and these were distributed nationally by the Ministry of Health. And this is just some examples of these tools. This is the investigation request form, the pre-printed labels that were developed, of course, reduced transcription errors and transcription steps. Just a quick anecdote at this point, one of the laboratory that I showed first that we were working in India, this was a 786-bed hospital. They saw approximately 1,500 outpatients per day in that facility, and they were collecting samples, blood samples, with needles and syringes, and then taking the needle off and expelling the blood into the tube. And these tubes were set up in very tight racks, you know, like 96 tubes in a rack, right next to one another. So you can imagine what was happening when that blood was being expelled into the tube, droplets spilling over, mix-ups, and they were writing names on all of these tubes. It was a real mess. We converted them to using vacutainers, and that was like scales falling from the eyes when they began to see what the advantages of that were. So that another good experience. But yes, so standardized specimen ID numbers and procedures, very important. The pre-printed registers, so that there was standardization in the country of how data were captured. So the point here is that they didn't walk in and implement an electronic system. The first thing they did was get the processes right and get a paper-based system working properly, and then began working on the implementation of an electronic system. The training they performed was extensive. They trained 20 in-country facilitators, trained the trainer, so to speak, and created a number of modules for them to use as they went about doing their training. all the way from the overview of the laboratory information system in Tanzania. In other words, what is expected? What is this information system going to be used for? What, you know, why are we doing this? It's not just for the laboratory. It's to address a larger public health issue in the country. And went all the way through to these other issues you see on here, general laboratory management tools. And in Vietnam, it was a slightly different process. They used an open source software to develop in Hanoi and in Ho Chi Minh City, and working closely again with the CDC staff in the country. But they also engaged Vietnamese company to actually work with them on the development of the information system. And this is sort of the twinning concept again. We actually had that development company come to Minnesota and to Iowa, where they're using OpenELIS, and work closely with them. And the result has been that that was selected for a pilot. It's been customized to meet their needs. There's been translation. They have a network and infrastructure installed. They have laboratory managers trained. There are a few changes in the software, but these releases have already been accomplished as far as I know. But once again, by following a process, even though it was slightly different than what was in Tanzania, this has been a very successful intervention and clearly is leaving the country with sustainability and ownership. In the near future in Vietnam, they're going to interface instruments with the OpenELIS product and do an evaluation and then expand to other laboratories in Vietnam. So the lessons, once again, are that first of all, we must assure that quality of testing is addressed. We don't want bad information going into information systems. We must be sure that as programs work and contribute towards the development of laboratory information systems, that those systems are now capable of integrating other diseases. They cannot be vertical programs. The importance of engaging end users is critical. The epidemiologist should be sitting at the table and other end users that are going to be relying on this information. And the issue of instilling a sense of ownership by going through that process of developing the working groups and the frequent meetings, that sense of ownership will be instilled. I mentioned earlier the importance of having consultants and staff skilled in clinical and public health laboratory science as well as in information science. It's really important. I've actually gone through an implementation of EPIC in our laboratory in Michigan back in the mid-90s, and I was very fortunate in having staff there that were primarily laboratory scientists, but who knew a lot about computers. They were actually hobbyists, and I actually sort of changed their position descriptions and took advantage of their interest and made them even happier employees because they are now working on development of our own laboratory information system. And the last item is important as well. Keep end users' expectations reasonable and keep the scope of work in check. And I think that's the last slide, and I have to leave that up if there's time for a question or two. I will.
Well, unless someone's desperate to ask a question right now,
we'll leave it to the end.
Go on to our next presentation, and then certainly invite at the end. Hopefully, we'll have time at the end and be able to invite questions. Thank you, Bob.